Blackest Break with yours truly, Casey Lavis. I have my wonderful team around the table tonight. Tonight's guests are Tori Williams, Malcolm Darrell, Chris Lehman, Merk A,
Jim,
and Leisha Mack. And tonight's topic is Christopher Dormer.
Lord Jesus.
What was that question, Toria? Madman?
Or just a man driven to the edge.
Or just a man driven to the edge. What do you guys think about this brother that has L.A. up in arms this weekend? All the black men are staying indoors.
Well, I will start, which I never do. Personally, I'm actually happy that he is exposing some of the weaknesses in the police department that need to be addressed as such. And I'm speaking of the shootings that have occurred after with them on this mad chase to find him, willing to shoot, you know, two women in a truck and another truck, supposedly, and who knows what else they've done. Who really knows? And so I'm happy that at least the public can see that, if they do see that, because I don't know that the news is, like, a lot of times, a lot of articles I've read, they kind of have one sentence devoted to the innocent people that have been involved. But I think it also reminds me of the shooting at the Empire State Building, where that one man went and shot his old boss, and then the cops came and shot 10 people trying to shoot the guy that shot his boss. And that was it. It wasn't a mass shooting. It was one guy going to kill someone, which sucks, but 10 people ended up being shot because the police have no aim and no training and are scared to death. So, of one guy with a gun. So I'm happy for any exposure to those kind of things that are, to me, huge problems in the police. Like, huge. They affect everyone, whether they realize it or not. That's why people don't trust the police. They basically can do whatever they want, and they have no repercussions. They can kill people and get away with it. And I'm like, let's look at that. Let's see why is that? And that's a problem.
Absolutely.
It's a little bit of it's weird because on one hand, yes, like when I read the manifesto, for me, and I've read parts of it, but like Kershaw would have said, you start to reveal why somebody would react and would sort of like it would snap in such a manner. Because I always believe, just like people are one paycheck from homelessness, I think we're all run by a situation from a mental crisis, mental breakdown. And I say that because we live in a world with information overload. We live in a world where we live in a world of hypocrisy. You know, we want to condemn people the war on drugs, but yet we steadily contribute to it. We want to condemn guns, yet we steadily contribute to it, but through the media, through entertainment, violence, through video games. You know, and so then you have a person like this who's been trained and is well-informed. I mean, if you read some of this, it's crazy. Like, there's this quote he has here where I'm like, this does not sound like a crazy person. He goes, "The tree of liberty must be refreshed from time to time with the blood of patriots and tyrants. This is not quite directed toward the U.S. government, which I fully support. This is toward the LAPD, who cannot monitor itself. The consent decree should have not been lifted ever." And I'm thinking to myself, wow, this is a man who it's very easy to label him as crazy and he snapped, but he has obviously thought about this whole scenario. He then later on goes on to talk about how he's very clear about what's going to happen. He says, "The violence of action," this is the second to last paragraph on page 11 of his manifesto, "the violence of action will be high, capitalized. I am the reason TAC Alert was established. I will bring unconventional and asymmetrical warfare to those in LAPD uniform, whether on or off duty." And then he goes on to talk about these different things that I don't know what they stand for. But I'm like, wow. This is not like this to me. If I were them, I would just drop the ego and be like, "What's going on? Why is one of our own gone off like that?" Like we're so good at not dealing with the actual issue, or not being diagnosed, but not treating it, and not treating it, and then taking care of it. Mm-hmm. So we gloss over things, and so this can become sensationalized, crazy black, you know, savage man on the loose, as opposed to, well, let's talk about everything that's in here. Let's go back and look at all these cases and what happened. Because he's asking us, the media, everybody to do that. And I was watching Piers Morgan, who had Chief Bratton on, I think this was last night or the night before. And, you know, it was just like, oh, the media makes me sick. Mm-hmm. Because Piers, like, played into it, like, my name is mentioned, and, you know, he starts asking what were basically all the right questions. But I'm like, media, journalists, do your job. Journalism is not about emotion. It's about trying to find out the facts. And there may be some very clear and honest facts in this man's story. And I'm telling you, that's why I'm not quick to judge. And, you know, some people may say, oh, well, you don't have anybody who is a relative in law enforcement or in the military, blah, blah, blah. No, I have a lot of people I know are retired. But at the same time, I know that I live in a country that is reactionary and not proactive and not at the least, the least concerned with mitigating its horrific centuries-long problem, and particularly because he talks so much about discrimination and the bigotry of the LAPD, I am one who is leaning towards believing a lot of what's in this manifesto.
I heard you just sent something recently to Anderson Cooper. Did you guys hear anything about that?
Yeah.
Okay. What was it exactly?
It was the badge that had been...
Something that would have pulled a hole through it.
And that means something. Oh, God, that was all on the... Because you get that...
And video.
Those medals,
video.
Or audio.
I do want to acknowledge that your heart goes out to the innocent lives that were lost.
Yes,
absolutely.
The daughter and the fiance.
And the two ladies who were shot recently
by the cop. Right, because behind them are families, loved ones that are unfortunately they're suffering behind the actions, perhaps, of the LAPD.
Or the relatives, right?
Which leads to my point. I am certain, that at some point, Quan, that's the girl, I think that was her daughter last night, Lynn, I just try to imagine what her mom is going to do. That mom is going to lie down in that bed one night when she's thinking about the loss of her daughter and turn to her husband and say, what happened? Because who would come after our children? Accuse you or say that you've done something, because it's not really clear to us. I'm not hearing a lot of people saying, oh, this is obvious crazy, right?
It's not so calculated,
right? I haven't heard a lot of people saying he's crazy,
mm-hmm.
I'm not hearing that. And when I say crazy in reference, without disrespect, like mental illness, complete, just lost it,
right.
I'm not hearing that. People are going, whoa, something has pushed him
to the edge.
And as a mother, and you're married, what happened?
Right.
What happened? There's no way. I don't think if I were married, that my husband could look me in the face and just say, no, baby, he's just crazy. Because he's targeting us.
Yeah.
Like in the manifesto, he's talking about, I know your children. I know your children's best friends. Somebody's going to ask, what's happening?
Right.
What's happening?
Right.
He does. I'm sorry. You have to always go back because this is so critical. The information is so critical. In the manifesto on page 8 of 11, he actually targets everybody who feels like has been wrong, and it's not even just white people. He goes, he says,
oh, yeah,
he starts and he says, I'm here to change and make positive culture, LAPD versus the community, and honest, good officers needs to and will change. I'm here to correct and calibrate your morale compasses to true north. And he says, to those Caucasian officers, and he does a whole paragraph about them. Then he says,
to black
officers, those Hispanic officers, those lesbian officers, those Asian officers, those of you who go along to get along. I mean, so it's interesting because I wonder if he almost considers himself like a modern day, obviously very radical Robin Hood in a sense. Like, he's like, I'm going to, even if it costs me my life, I'm going to reveal and exploit all of you.
And the anger that he has right now, that is not a new anger in the black community. It's nothing It's nothing new.
No. And it ties into our friend John and his experience, the documentary that he did the night at the marina when he and four of his friends were attacked by the LAPD when they were just trying to go to the movies. They did an entire documentary behind that, and the whole idea, what was the black men being profiled, driving while black, like that's an issue that we know that black men specifically deal with when it comes to dealing with the cops. And in our community in general, just an extreme presence of police for like really no reason at all, they're over here to me in an overabundance. There might be a reason in certain areas that need extra protection, I guess, but to me their presence is just always super duper heightened, from the helicopters to the street cops to the cops on bikes.
It's almost like a modern day, and I thought about it, I was like, well, this is Django, but the enemy,
a lot of people say that,
is not, you know, the slave master. The enemy is the LAPD.
yes,
and, you know, it's for the first time the minority community, because I won't just say blacks have had bad experiences with LAPD. For the first time, it's like somebody's taking charge the other way around and getting back at the LAPD. I mean, I see put Cocula a long time ago, so the thought is nothing new to the community. Someone acting on it publicly and saying, this is what I'm going
and
to
a
do.
Cop himself.
A cop himself, and I'm waging war against you. Like, boom, I'm not afraid of dying. My purpose is to reveal all. There are folks cheering this on. There are who you cannot discredit the way they feel. You can't say, oh, no. There's some validity to that anger and that distrust and that strong distaste and dislike for LAPD.
What do you guys think about this in relationship to gun control, which is something that we were going to come back to, in light of what happened in Newtown, Connecticut at the end of 2012. That gun control has been on the table heavier than ever since that situation happened. And I could make this into an entirely different conversation about,
you know what you're about to say.
Right. Yeah. The situation that happened, which it never happens usually, in an urban city, in an urban setting, with the conversation about gun control being as heavy, but
it does, but not like that. Like, the shooting of our children is like they're innocently standing on the playground and they get hit, or the street, you know, the gangbangers ran through the school and shot and somebody got hit. And the news go, oh, you know, that's what happened in the hood, keep it going.
Yeah, black lives don't hold much value. But in this situation where you got a black man who is very well armed in this situation, I'm just curious to what the gun-loving NRA supporting.
He speaks to gun control in the manifesto.
Yeah. Remind me of what he says.
Can you find it?
I will say one thing about the gun control thing that I think he does contribute that's worth talking about is just the idea that a lot of pro-gun people try to put out there, like, the people that commit murders are deranged, insane criminals, and I think that that is completely inaccurate. A lot of times it is a person that snaps that day, or it's a business thing. Like, if you're a drug dealer and you're protecting your turf, that's your money, whatever, like, your enemies. Like, it's not a mental, and I mean, I think for someone, you know, like me, I've never shot a gun, I've never held a gun, I've never killed someone, I won't ever, hopefully, knock on wood. It seems crazy to be able to kill someone, period, and I know that I feel that, but at the same time, nobody lives the life of other people, and like we talked about, the value of life, like if you can get yourself into a mind frame where that person is what stands between you and money, like you don't see them as a life, like you see them as something in your way. And I'm not saying that's right, but I just think that if we ignore that and focus on crazy people who go shoot 26-year-olds, that's not the norm, and that's not the problem in the sense of what guns are doing to the country.
And what the problem really is.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, and I think it's a distraction to focus on these deranged lunatics when, no, it's actually like your next door neighbor that snapped and shot his wife today, you know, like, it's not that, like, it's just like rape, like, they act like it's these crazy men on the street that are jumping on top of women, but usually it's someone you know, that you were on a date and they got aggressive. You know, I mean, it's just like that perception is so damaging because I just think it makes you scared of the wrong things and feel safe in situations that aren't safe.
Which is true.
Your kid playing at someone's house who has a gun in the house.
Right.
That is scary to me. Not the deranged person down the street on a killing rampage. Like, I would be more nervous of that, but, you know.
I unfortunately did not find the information about the gun, his demos. But what I will say also, just so it's clear, that just like on another podcast where we talked about the young lady and, you know, she may be in a moment, a youthful moment where she just has certain ideals. I will say that also when we read this, it does sound like rage just coming forth without, I don't want to say rage coming out like he hasn't been thinking, because when you read it, he's obviously thought this out. And what's crazy is, he says he doesn't fear death because he died in 2009. Mm-hmm. So that basically lets you know that it doesn't matter, like he don't think that he's out here to try and...
He doesn't have anything to lose.
He doesn't have anything to lose because he felt like his life literally... And what's kind of sad also is that he really, obviously upset that he really had a deep faith in the system. Mm-hmm. He really believed in, like, if there's a grievance, I can go, and if there are lies, and if the facts are not straight, I will be vindicated. And that did not happen, and a lot of us in the Black community have realized that has not happened for centuries. And so, this to me is yet another thing that could almost divide the country, because there are people who don't understand that stance that Black people take. They don't understand why during 9/11 many of us weren't, like, running and afraid of terrorism, because we've lived in terror for centuries in this country. So, again, I guess for me, it's also important just to recognize that he, just because he wrote this manifesto, it's pretty cogent and clear and seems very detailed, that doesn't mean there's always two sides to every story, obviously. So, but isn't it curious that many of us at this table are just leaning towards trusting him? And I don't want to dismiss that instinct in us. And I just think it's curious. I think America needs to ask itself, why would there be a part of our population where a man is running around meticulously killing people, plotting to destroy lives, and we're not all on the same side of this issue?
Yeah, and this is a situation too where I think we're going to have to question every little, which we should do anyway, we have to question every little bit of information we get from the media, because they're of course going to try to shape it to look a particular way. I just hope that some of the things he discussed are looked into. It would be a shame for all that information to be there and nobody take it into account. I don't know what to say. It's keeping me attached to the news, that's for sure.
One of the things I found disturbing kind of goes to what you just said, Malcolm, about him, that frustration and a rage. To me, I had a perception of the manifesto towards the end when he started apologizing to his family members and friends about the things that he missed in their life because of this situation. And to me, maybe I was reading it deeply, but what I got from that, he was kind of admitting that he became so obsessed with this. Because he even says in the manifesto, my mother says, you know, good things happen to bad people. So I think there is a part of him that realizes that he has gone over and that he's obsessed with this and that he can't let it go. And that's when that apology comes to his friends and, you know, the weddings that he missed. And he's lost his relationship with his mother and sister. Which is funny because when the media put that out there that he lost his relationship with his mother and sister, then the way they presented it was almost that he lost that relationship because they thought he was guilty. But when you read the manifesto, it's almost that he lost them to depression. They lost him to his obsession with this. Mm-hmm. It wasn't because they thought he was guilty. He just got to a point of no return where they couldn't pull him back. Mm-hmm. And we've all seen that where something has happened to someone and we can say, you know, let it go. And it hasn't. And he even asked, you know, when I'm gone, don't remember me for these last few days. Like, remember that man I was before this.
Right.
I'm not being on revenge. I personally feel like if he felt the need to get back and feel responsible that he would basically attack them and not their loved ones, mm-hmm. We're just coming off like a damn movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the system fucks you over. And, you know, I'd like to see how these, I want to see how the street thugs feel about this, because basically he was like, I saw something I didn't like and I reported it. In the sense, he snitched and was like, she did something wrong. I don't think that was cool and that's not right and she needs to be punished for it. And they were like, no, that's good. And, you know, and now you in trouble for saying something.
Yep.
And that's because cops have their own code of honor, and so you're not supposed to be talking against anything that you see, whether it's wrong or not.
Okay, get it, which is it.
Because it sounds, isn't it the woman who he, because it was a woman who he,
yeah, the woman he met. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
For excessive force.
Two quick things, like, I'm actually a bit, like, the reason why the manifesto kind of, the whole thing is bothersome is because of how much it's like a movie.
Yes.
It's bothersome because of how much it's like Batman, or it's like, you know, any kind of vigilante justice type thing. And, you know, I ask myself, like, if his reasoning is real, does that still make it okay? And I think that there's points at which, like, you do have to ask yourself what you're willing to fight for and what you're willing to die for and things like that. But the parts where it does stray away to me is, yeah, he's going after loved ones, or him being so okay with certain aspects of what he's doing rather than writing a book or going on television shows
or suing the city.
Yeah, right. So, you know, certain courses of action, I mean, maybe if I had seen that had happened already and he was just dead set on making this happen, then I would understand that. But I think that's just the real worrisome part to me. The part that I never quite understood is why anybody, especially working in the police or anybody trying to own a gun, why would they not enact constant psychological tests? Like, why would you not do that? Why would you not have, like, a yearly or every 2 year psychological exam?
Oh, no, they do.
For cops?
Oh, no, they have to take them, like, I think almost, like, more than once a year. So, this has all happened post his firing. You know what I mean? Like, he got fired, and then that just like, completely the trajectory of his life completely changed. So, that's why it's interesting when you look at the media, that there it's hard for them to, they can only deal with this sort of now rampage to describe him, because it sounds like he was pretty upstanding, like, citizen. Mm-hmm. I mean, he's got pictures with the chief of police.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, he was in Afghanistan, I think. I think it was Afghanistan. I mean, so partly you wonder, again, why is one of our soldiers, one of those people who defended righteousness, justice, the Constitution, defended, you know, all of these things that are seemingly altruistic and for the better good of the United States, why has this shift happened for him? And again, I do, because, you know, as I sit here listening to everybody, I do think to myself, you know, what if that was somebody in my family? What if that, you know what I mean? Because it's so easy to be like, well, you know, I think, you know, we really need to focus on, you know, why is he acting like this, and not really deal with the fact that there are people who really are, like, in a lot of pain right now. And then there's some people who would say, well, that's the life of people who live under the torture of the LAPD every day. You know, mm-hmm. When they wake up out of their house and their daughter or son is bleeding out on the ground,
yeah,
and not doing anything about it.
It's kind of crazy that's something that we have to be careful of. Because living in a large, when you live in a large city, one of your concerns is having anybody in your family have to deal with any kind of level of violence. But for me, a fear is, you know, what if the police interact with my husband? Mm-hmm. And, like, and that should not be a fear.
Well, some of the stuff that went down with them, the women getting shot at. I mean,
right.
That incident just compounded, like, oh, well, maybe he has something, maybe he's right about this. Like,
absolutely.
How is he so much of a sharpshooter? But these fools just, we see somebody and just spray on them.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously they didn't say freeze, hold,
get out the car. He knows it. That's why I think he probably plans to end his own life, because I doubt he'll allow himself to end at the hands of them. But he sounds as if he has this so well thought out. And when did this start? Friday, Thursday?
No, like last weekend, because he killed a couple last weekend.
That was last weekend. So was that Monday this
think it was around Wednesday or Thursday when he went, did his full...
And like, and they were going from, like, Riverside to Torrance.
He's been to San Diego, and he's now in L.A., Riverside.
And they still haven't found him.
I think also, I think everybody agrees that his method is not good. Obviously, killing innocent people is not the way to get your point across, like, 100%. It actually takes away from your point, because now... you have given the other side something to point to and use against you. So I think we all agree with that.
Yes.
I just think it's, you know, important to think about also what impact being someone who has the power to kill somebody has on you, which is we see with the soldiers coming home. And I mean, it's so hard to imagine being in a situation where you are able to kill people with, you know, no repercussions whatsoever in a time of war. You can really kill whoever you come across. And then for someone who's been in that situation with that permission to come back to, you know, quote unquote, you know, civilization or whatever. And in his mind, I think I could understand that he could see this as an act of war too, in the sense of they are in my way, you know, and just like if I was in Iraq, I would be shooting people. I'm going to shoot people here because it's a circumstance where I've been given that permission before. And especially being a cop, you're given that permission also, despite what anybody wants to say, because there really aren't repercussions like he's talking about. I mean, they're going to protect each other no matter what. So I think it's a little easier for me to understand why he would think that this is justified, even though it isn't, obviously. But I mean, then you could say, well, why is it justified when an innocent person is killed in Afghanistan too? You know, like, it's not, but it is at the same time. So,
and I think
it's hard.
Him going after, he wants them to be accountable to the people that they mean the most to. So, and he even says, you know, look your children in the face and explain why your siblings are dead. You know, that wife, those that are losing their family members, when he said, I'm going after your family, I'm going after your kids. And he's like, I lost my family, so you're going to lose yours. So maybe we as the public, we can't understand why are you just killing innocent people. And there are going to be people who won't side with him because of what he's doing. But those that are losing their innocent loved ones at the cost of my loved one here who is accusing of doing something, and I can't just readily wipe it off as a crazy person. Those are going to be people pushing for that investigation, pushing to find out what the truth is. And I do believe that there's going to be some journalist who's going to, why wouldn't you?
Somebody has to.
That's a former journalist major.
That's a war waiting to happen.
While it's a war waiting to happen, the accolades, your ego of wanting to be that top journalist is going to push you to go and find the truth, right? Because a good journalist, to be unbiased, you've got to show both ends
both
of those
sides.
Stories, which is why I think he's digging and digging and digging and digging, and he's getting, you know, big ups to certain journalists in there. And oh, don't sleep for 1 minute that Anderson Cooper and that group over there aren't going to investigate that and go, who wouldn't? Who wouldn't?
But something you said to me is really resonating. Those families of the people who he's calling out, they're going to go to their family members whose names are listed and look them in the eye. Like, what is really going on? And that's when people are going to have to be accountable. Like, things that you've done in your career that you've kept secret, now you've put us all at risk.
Is it true?
You put us all at risk. You're going to say, is it true?
Right. It's not like, I said, it's nothing. Oh, it was a gangbanger getting retaliation. That's easy to digest and understand. Okay, this gangbanger, or we put him in jail for 10 years and he doesn't, you know, he wants revenge. It's not that. It's saying you did this. This is what's happening. You're a part of the team. This is what you know about. You gotta say, you know, is it true?
Right.
It's human nature, because you're trying to understand why he was so vengeful and had that strong taste in his mouth to hurt us.
Right.
Where does that come from?
Where is that coming from?
Yeah, because I can't sleep on just telling myself, well, he's just crazy.
Right, because that's not enough. That's not reason enough.
Yeah, it's not.
Not with all this documentation. That's not reason enough.
Not saying I gotta clear my name. That's all a man has. I have to say, although none of this is funny, I have to chuckle when he's like, and First Lady, by the way, I love the bangs.
Well, his whole list of beautiful black women. Or women, period.
It's a size. That's what I'm like, oh, he's all the emotion.
He started reading like an Oscar speech.
He goes with some real, like, man, especially when he goes back into his childhood and, like, yeah. Said the priest and swan him. And yeah. You know, I'm not an African Christian. He's like, oh,
right.
this is what people are like.
I would like to thank all of my unnamed women that I were dating.
You know what? No, you know what it is?
Oh, great.
You know what it is? You know what it is? What he's saying, I think, very underlying, and this is the English major in me, so forgive me. What he's communicating in that is that he saw himself as being somebody who was always going to be important. Like, he was going to be on the police force. He was going to go to war. He was fighting for righteousness, all this other stuff. So he's saying,
he's writing his obituary
in his biography.
And his goodbye.
Because mine would have some humor in there, too, like that,
that's
you know?
True.
And I've never wrote my own obituary.
That's true.
That's what it was, so I'm like,
can you imagine reading your name in this, like, beyond the people who are... Well, no, anybody who's reading it, he's just like, oh my God, why is my name in this? I'm like, oh, see, planning, Jew. And honestly, I mean, you're really close. He sent a package to CNN with 3 bullet holes through the coins that he received. Was it a coin? Yeah, they
were. Or the badge.
It was like a miniature badge. I mean, I think he got it for something.
Somebody, you know, I ain't even gonna say somebody about to turn this into a movie. I'm telling you right now. Well, you know it's gonna be a movie. It's gonna be made for TV and all that. I mean, it's kind of very close to law-abiding citizens.
Yeah, yeah, it is.
Although there wasn't, you know, just extreme torture. But very close to.
Well, on that note,
we got this track.
We know Z called Chris wasn't at the door.
We thank you so much for tuning in to this, like, it's great. Be sure to.